Hello, I'm Keith Palm, and welcome to Focus Asia Pacific from PCJ Radio International. Today we bring you part two of a two-part documentary called The CIA's Secret War in Laos. Radio producer Peter Langstaten thought his father was a paper-pushing bureaucrat in the State Department. Then one day his father revealed his double life as a spy. We now present part two.
This was recorded in the marketplace under a thatch roof.
Hey, Brew.
Hey, Brew.
I think Uncle Pete told me Dad had, like, a party trick where he would take a washer, and like, a round washer, and then he would put a piece of tape over it and throw it up in the air and then pull his gun and shoot from the hip and then go pick up the washer, and there would be, like, a hole in the middle through the tape.
What?
Maybe Dad told that to me.
That's possible.
Oh, God, I like that guy. Damn, I wish your father was here to hear this and all that.
Me too. What do you think he would think of this?
Probably just shake his head and walk away. But I'm not talking about you or your profession, but I'm talking about this particular project with me being interviewed.
I don't think he'd have much patience for this.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't have much patience for it.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome. I'm glad I had the opportunity to talk to you about your father and all. I'm sorry he's not here. He could have a beer and I could have a scotch and tell you all kind of lies.
After my dad died, some of his CIA buddies held a memorial service for him. Everybody was dressed in polo shirts, and there was baby carrots and hummus on the table. Tom Norton was there. He played a DVD that he had cut together called Travels with Al, and it was a quite long picture slideshow set to classic rock songs. So we all sat there and watched it. Afterward, a lot of these guys came up to me and they said things like, you know, have you ever considered joining the agency? We could use someone like you. Give me a call. You know, you'd make a good spy like your father. When we left, I thought, you know what? They're right. And so I got the application packet and I filled it all out. I'm going to be a spy. I thought that for a solid year. It was one night right before I sent in the application. I was up on the roof of my apartment when I was living in New York City. And I was drinking beers with my friend, and I'm telling him about my intention to do this. And I just thought to myself, I can't keep a secret. I have like a baseline nervousness that would make me flunk a polygraph right off the bat. The most enjoyment in my life is derived from talking to people and hearing about their experiences. Having a career where the premise is that I can't share my experiences with people, I just think that would make me so lonely. I would make a terrible spy.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Pete.
Xing Ying.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Hi,
yeah,
I'm
Boo.
Hi. Come on in. You guys just have to get around the baby. This is my little sister's baby. Her firstborn.
Don't fall.
So there's about 4 other families that live here. Well, my siblings.
Oh.
So different multi-generational home.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So come on in. Hey, don't throw
at
her.
Yeah, they're drawing those fishies.
The third.
No kanya jong, my name is Tong Seng Ya, Seng Yang. When I was very young, my parents told me, when you go out from home, don't take anybody else's things. No one will see, but the sky will see what you're doing. In Laos, we think God is sky. Actually, Hmong believe that we have to do good, and then after we die, we'll be born again. My parents, they taught me when I was very young, we shouldn't do only good things. My father have about 30 water buffalo, and we have about 100 goat, and over 100 chicken. We grow rice, and we have corn field, vegetable field. We grow all kind of food. And that is the very first village that I remember. Every morning, I have to go out and take those animals to the field. And then late in the evening, I have to take them back home. We start working when we were about 6 years old. For me, I really do not have a time to be like a boy and play and do the way I want to do. Well, I started school when I was approximately 7 years old. We have to walk to school about 10 hours every day, back and forth, studying early in the morning and then get home about midnight. I think approximately when I was 12. And we went to school, we get to a valley. And then we saw a group of Hmong soldiers were there blocking the road, won't let people go through. So when we get there, they asking nicely, say, how old are you, to each person. I remember I told them I almost 12. One of my classmates told the Hmong man that this young man is the shortest one. At first, they won't take me, but finally my classmates say he is very smart. So they took me with them. They say, we will just take you to a safe place. They maybe just tell us a lie. At first, I feel scared. And I told them that I don't want to be here. And this is, just keep your mouth shut. Just be silent. After that, they brought the gun to us. They said, this is the gun you're going to use. And they show us how to use the gun and loan and reload the gun. And then I see two American men. The first time I saw white people, two tall men, white men. One of them came and said something to us. I do not know what he said, but it was translated to us by a Hmong man. He said, how are you guys doing? And he said, welcome you guys here. We will help you young people. But he said to the Hmong soldier, maybe. He said, why you guys take so many young people like this? They're too young, as I imagine. But...
Can you just tell me that one more time? Mm-hmm. You imagined the American said, why did you take so many young people?
Mm-hmm. They were talking to each other. Finally, I heard an answer from the Hmong man say that because we need more soldiers. We don't care how old are they or how young they are. At least they can use the gun. The American, he just say something smiling to us. I just don't know what he's saying.
After a while, the Americans started to teach you things. What did they teach you?
Maybe he's scared that we do not know how to use gun. He just repeating, loan and reloan. I have about 100 bullets on my waist, and I have about 3 hand grenades, and I have a bag of food. I'm the shortest one in the group, and it's too heavy already, so I can't put the gun on my shoulder and carry. I have to pull the gun. My parents talk, don't do any bad thing to anyone else. Don't kill anyone. Don't shoot anyone. But they show us to kill. And they say, if you don't shoot, you will get shot. You don't kill them, they will kill you.
Did you wonder why the Americans were there?
No. Gun is from him. Hand grenade and food are from him. We are with his side. I imagine then, oh, he is a good man, that's all.
Why? Why did you think that?
Because he's smiling and he say, if you need anything, I can show you and help you. As a child, I think he should be a good man.
So he was nice to you?
Yeah. And many times when he passed by, he waving, hi. one of the leader group, he came to me and he said, it's your night to sleep. It's your night to sleep. You may comfortable tonight. I remember was very cool night. It's very dark, very dark. I'm not sleeping yet. And then finally I heard just like machine gun. It's just like all sound gun. I can't hear nothing. And then I get out right away because I went to where they told me. My friend's there. And then he just sit down and do nothing. All I see is he's shaking. And then we'd see that if I die and you live, you have to go tell my parents where I died. If you die and I live, then I will go tell your parent. If both of us die, then that's our lot. But we are shaking. Why you guys still keep shaking and doing that? Shoo, you have an eye, you have a hand, you want to die? Shoo. I can see bullet run close to me. It's red like fire. And then I was alone. And then I point my gun to there and I just shoot. I feel that I killed some people because no bullet came from there anymore. Well, maybe that person is kidnapping like me, or I don't know. I have no choice. If I don't kill him, he may kill me. But I don't see him, who he is, how he look like. Oh, I see the bullet is coming, so. That was in my mind forever since to today. The nightmare I've been having ever since is back to where I was fighting. Or running away from enemy.
You don't want to look?
Singh, do you think that you were too young to fight in the war?
Yes, I think I am too young.
In 1975,
mm-hmm.
the war was over.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the Americans left.
Mm-hmm.
And they left a lot of Hmong still behind mm-hmm. in Laos.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of them got killed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever feel angry with the Americans that they left so quickly?
Not really. But I feel one thing. No one is righteous. And God also know what we thinking in our heart.
After the fall of Saigon and the Vietnam War ended in 1975, the Pathet Lao, the communist group in Laos, they published in their newspaper that they were going to exterminate the Hmong. They were marked for having fought against them and for working with the Americans. So 2 weeks after that, the CIA evacuated General Vang Pao, the commander of all the Hmong forces, as well as 2,500 of the Hmong closest to him and their families, and they brought them in helicopters to refugee camps in northern Thailand. Basically, a refugee crisis ensued. Tens of thousands of Hmong were left behind and had to make their own way to safety in Thailand. There was an exodus. They abandoned their villages, they hid at night in dense jungle while they were being hunted by the Pathet Lao. Often they were walking for weeks at a time, and then they would get to the Mekong River, the last obstacle between them and safety. Families would inflate flimsy inner tubes and tie each other together with rope, and then wade into the water and swim for hours into the dead of the night. If they were lucky enough not to drown in the river swollen during monsoon season, many were often killed by Pathet Lao who were patrolling the banks. The CIA was basically completely gone from Laos. It was easy for them to disappear because they were never really there in the first place. I know at least one CIA officer stayed behind to help resettle Hmong refugees from Thailand to the United States. And I wish I could say that that CIA officer was my dad, but it wasn't.
So why you heard about what we have in Laos? We call the secret war.
Yeah.
Hey.
The way I heard it about it is that my father was in the CIA.
Oh, okay. Your father.
He was maybe worked with you. I don't know.
His name?
His name was Alan Stanton. And they called him Pigpen.
Oh, okay. I heard about that.
You heard about that?
Yeah. I heard about that.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Because my cousin is a colonel, and I was in the home of my cousin all the time, so I saw almost every American. Oh, okay.
So maybe, so you may have been in the same room as my father.
Yeah.
Huh.
I saw him, but I don't have anything to say.
So you saw him. Somebody called his name.
Yeah.
And huh.
Okay.
Can my dad take a picture with you guys?
Yeah, of course.
You play both feet. Perfect. One. Time out. One, two, three.
This.
I'm not even exactly sure what was so exciting about finding out that Singh was in the same room as my dad. It felt like something linked us in that moment, like a triangle was formed with the specter of my dad as the third point. My dad's actions brought me directly to this living room through some kind of intergenerational duty, like a Vietnam War era original sin I'm trying to wipe away. I don't know, it just feels like my responsibility to talk to some people about what they think about this. I just wonder if there's kind of a dialectic of action and reflection that moves down through the generations. You know, my father made war, and then I make art about it. Like, is that what we're supposed to do? It's funny how there is this stereotypical dynamic where the father thinks the son is a, you know, ineffectual or a pansy or whatever, and talks too much about their feelings and thinks too much. It's that the father is forcing the son to do that because they didn't do it enough themselves. The father made the son that way. He gave the son no other choice than to be that way. My dad, at my age, he was in another country at war. He was fighting for the nation. He was saving people's lives. He was killing people. It makes me feel inferior. But at the same time, I know that necessary reflection, that's what we need more of. That's the thing that allows us to change course as a person, as a family, as a human society, not just action and demonizing reflection as some kind of effeminate pansying around. I just think that part of reflection is discussion. We can't just keep our proudest moments locked within us like secrets. My dad died a few years ago, and he said something to me on his deathbed that I didn't understand. I'm prouder of what we did in Laos than just about anything, other than you boys. But the Laos part wasn't the only part that I didn't understand. I was 23 and I hadn't done anything yet. And after he said that, I said, I'm gonna make you proud. I just wish you'd be there to see it.
Well, we certainly hope that you enjoyed listening to that program on the Secret War the CIA Had in Laos there by Peter Thun Lang. Anyway, that's all we have time for on this edition of the program. If you wish to contact us to let us know what you think, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address, pcjmedia@gmail.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you all, saying so long, take care. We'll see you again in 7 days. Bye-bye.